You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Thursday, 6 August. We've got Fed balance sheet data due late tonight. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Kia Nanyana, he from Prime XBT. Oh, precious metals. Tuesdays was all about PGMs. Yesterday was gold flying. Something happening here? Was this just, I don't know, flash in the pan? And then if we've got a moment, Supergroup and Sabvest updates. Not a lot of data, but some nice numbers. We're going to chat with Professor Reza Daniels from Stellenbosch. How to know when data is reliable and useful, particularly in economic theory? And then we're going to talk to Truth Sets Online. Potentially half of online ads are never seen by a human. How do we deal with that level of fraud? This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Excitedly low market share offers runway for Capitec's growth, says their CEO. Aspires to serve 95% of the population, and the very greatest opportunities lie in the backing South Africa's entrepreneurs. Business Day, Glencore's CEO says JSE exit is out of the question after Aussie listing. Morning markets, US was red, S&P down 0.2%, NASDAQ down 0.8%. The East is mixed. Well, we've got Sydney up 0.8%, then Tokyo down just over 1.5%. Hong Kong and Tencent both 2% off. Commodities mostly green. Gold futures 4,325. Brent 79.82. Platinum's a couple of dollars weaker, 1,766. And palladium 1,377. The rand is 16.33. Bitcoin 64,500. And top 40 opening call, a green open, but literally 1 point higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Kia Nanyana from Prime XBT. Kia, appreciate the early morning time. As I was saying there in the intro, we had a strong Tuesday for PGMs, 6 or 7% up on the day. Nothing particularly behind it that I could see. Yesterday was gold's turn, and this morning, gold futures above 4,300. Is this a bit of an awakening, or is this just, I don't know, that sometimes things bubble up and then they fade again? How are you reading this precious metal space?
You know, Si, our chief commercial officer suggested that I start sharing a lot of my thoughts with the public. So I opened a Trading View profile, and I find this a coincidence because a couple of days ago I wrote an article doing some technical and fundamental analysis on platinum price itself.
Yeah.
And I go back to Valterra Platinum CEO, who's been a platinum bull, a PGM bull for a very long time. I think what the market missed in the last result Valterra came out is that he's saying that people are not really discounting the fact that the AI infrastructure build has platinum right in the middle of it. Through hydrogen fuel cells, you're looking at as well electrolyzers, and the AI data cooling systems need platinum. And when you look at the World Investment Council for platinum, what they're saying is that this is going to be another year of supply deficit, meaning that the world is in 3 million ounces of supply deficit of platinum. So the fundamental picture for the platinum price is just, it's just saying that it is time to go buy. But it is even more interesting in the technical analysis, because a classic cup and handle formation has started, where you see from the highs in May, you see the handle of the cup forming in May, and then a base forming between June and July, which shows an accumulation phase between the prices of about 1,630 to 1,660, and the classic cup handle again forming right now, going upwards. And I think right now it is a bullish structure for the platinum price, and I think that's where a lot of people now are starting to reassess these platinum stocks.
Yeah, I take your point. And that chart is, I think we will sort of focus on, it was almost $300 beginning of last year. But actually, the better story is I take a nice rounding pattern and some action happening there. Let's move on from the precious metals. Quickly touch on two trading updates. I mean, not a lot in either, but markets liking both Supergroup and Sabvest. Sabvest, of course, the holding company with Chris Seabrook. Both looking like they're going to deliver decent, although we've got to take the sale of SG Fleet out of Supergroup because that distorts things.
Yeah, no, the SG Fleet has been. I think once you get to a level of maturity in a business, you want to streamline operations, and you'll see it in a couple of businesses right now. We're streamlining of operations. They even sold a German Intime Logistics as well.
Yeah.
But the core supply chain now across Africa and Europe has been operationally quite efficient. In terms of the financial metrics, revenue up 17%, EBITDA up about 5.9%. They actually also listed their first corporate bond linked to Zaronia, reducing long-term interest cost exposure. So, I mean, it's really quite interesting to see. But when you look across Sabvest, I mean, I think it's one of their long-term track record is really incomparable. I mean, they have compound an annual growth rate over 20 years of NAV, close to 20.2%. I mean, if you put money with them for them to invest for you, you would have done well. Headline earnings up 27.7%. Net asset value growing again above that compounded annual growth rate of 22%. But, you know, it's a holding company, so there's a lot of moving parts. But I think for me, within this stable liquidity and metrophile are some of the assets there that I think are really of great value.
Yeah, he has built a great collection of assets that sit there. And as you say, if you've been along for the ride, you've done incredibly well over time. We'll leave it there. It's Kenyanyana from Primex PT. Appreciate the early morning. That's our poll today on LinkedIn. Finally, time for the precious metals to start moving higher. Is this the real deal? Is this a false start? Gear seems to think maybe it is the real deal. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting with Professor Reza Daniels, Stellenbosch University's Dean of the Faculty of Economic Management Sciences. Professor, I appreciate the time. Your recent inaugural lecture just last month, I was watching it on YouTube. It is dense, but it makes a ton of sense and a huge fun watch. You talk around South Africa's important economic questions, poverty, unemployment, growth, and how they can't be answered with just theory and stats alone. We've got to be careful of sort of making attractive claims without defensible evidence. This really comes down to data and understanding, and I suppose testing the data. Is that a fair, very short summary of what you were talking around?
It covers a part of what I was talking about for sure. And what I was also talking about was just that in order to generate good policy, we need very sound theory as well as really good, robust data. And then the other thing is when we do implement policy in the context of complex things like COVID-19, that we need to be aware of the entire set of inputs that lead us to making those conclusions. So yes, certainly data is one of the most important.
Is that then around sort of, I don't know, back testing or constantly retesting the data and the assumptions that come from it? Because, I mean, you know, let's take economics, your field of expertise. There is a ton out there that we could always use, but we don't always necessarily know that it's fitting or perhaps even necessarily accurate or perhaps even useful.
Yes, indeed. So, you know, part of the job of academic economists who sort of study to very high levels and then work and teach is to interrogate the data that they're working with. Now, that might require quite a bit of time, and frequently that's where an academic, you know, it's a core part of their job to actually spend time doing research. And so my lecture was speaking to the audience of academics, saying it's our responsibility to, in fact, do that really well. We can't always expect people in government or the private sector to do it. They are much more time constrained. But for us who are looking very deeply into these questions, I feel it is our responsibility to do that.
That's actually a great point around the disconnect. Academia has that luxury. In fact, I almost want to say it's a core component of academia, which is that luxury
indeed
of time, of spending on it. Policymaking, government, perhaps almost exactly the inverse, particularly if you think around an aggressive election cycle. You want answers, you want solutions, you want it fixed by Tuesday.
Indeed. So look, in those circumstances, because you've got these time pressures in the world outside of academia, mm-hmm. let's use your example of election cycles. The public has to be very aware that the information that politicians might be using or political parties might be using might actually be quite badly compromised. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And sometimes the parties use that data because they know it's compromised and it tells a story they want to tell. So just coming back to academia there, you know, we're not allowed to fall for those tricks because of the fact that we have to look deep at the data. And you're right, it is a core part of our job to actually be a little bit more careful with what we say and what we do, because we expect it to go into the details and look for any limitations.
How do we, I mean, in an ideal world, you would have a theory, you would find the data, you would come to a solution, you would test it in a real world environment and then tweak it and refine it and perfect it. But if we go to your, for example, COVID response, we don't have time for that. How do we sort of create those processes or tests that sort of put the guardrails on the quality?
Your use of the COVID example is a great one, because that was something that the world had never really seen happen in real time, you know, globally in the way that it did. So under those conditions, yes, government are going to have to do the best they can with the information that they have. And that's why they started with that level 5 lockdown, because they were so concerned that the strain of flu was going to kill everyone that they rather preferred people to stay at home, not shop or go out, for example. So that's a dramatic response, right? So we learn from that. So the idea would now be that, given the fact that actually also caused a lot of harm, lots of people lost their jobs and didn't get them back, for example, when the next pandemic comes or the next really big shock comes, we would hope that we don't make the same mistakes going forward and that we rather are more nuanced in policymaking. So yes, we can't always do that in real time to crises, but we can learn from similar situations that happened in the past.
And to some degree, we did that in the pandemic. And I'm thinking about, as you said, we started very hard lockdown. I think it was supposed to be 3 weeks. It, of course, wasn't. And it kind of changed as time. In a sense, we propose, we test, we learn, we adapt, and we sort of go through that continual cycle live in real time and then post the event for next time.
100%. So exactly the way in which we went from level 5 to level 3 to level 1, then we went back up to level 3 with the Delta virus in the beginning of 2021. Then we went back again down to 2 and 1. That's precisely what we're talking about when it comes to these extreme environments, because what we also did during COVID is we mobilized data, actually, using the National Income Dynamics Coronavirus Rapid Mobile Survey to go into field every 3 months and survey a representative sample of adults to see how they were doing. And that survey, called NIDSCRAM, helped to inform the government about when they could actually relax the policy and the level of lockdown. So that was an example of when the academic community came online to assist government to make those decisions as prudently as possible.
Yeah, and I suppose we're never going to have perfect data, but it's that adapting to it. We'll leave it there. It's Professor Reza Daniels. He's Stellenbosch University's Dean of the Faculty of Economic Management Sciences. Professor, appreciate the time.
Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for 3 decades.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Mark Dehulun. He's CEO and co-founder of Truth Sets Online. Mark, appreciate the time talking around online advertising. And I don't want to say fake ads, because those sound like the scam ads, the, you know, I don't know, give me $100,000 and I'll make you a millionaire. But the fact that advertisers, a company, places ads, they do it online, but they're not necessarily getting the bang for buck. Potentially half of the adverts that they are paying for are not being seen by humans. Is that a fair number, a fair reflection of what the data is showing you and your team?
It's an absolutely fair reflection, yes. And in many cases, it's understated. In some cases, depending on how advertisers do approach ad fraud, it's probably on the higher side. I think that the big issue really is to understand that this kind of fraud and waste is structural, and that most advertisers don't know what their true exposure is.
That's a good point. And to be clear, I mean, it's equally, you know, this is not an online story. It's just a different way it's happening in places such as maybe print or TV or something. Where is that missing going? I mean, is this the old school? And I remember back in the day where you would, you know, there would be sort of fake websites that were set up that were never seen by humans, but would take the clicks. Is it still that sort of process, but perhaps sort of fueled, hyper-fueled by AI these days?
Simon, it's absolutely that sort of process, but even more. So the issue of fake websites, which, face it, in the real world, these are real websites.
For sure.
We go to them. However, they've been created with one particular motive in mind, and that is to steal ad inventory, or rather to offer ad inventory for no reward whatsoever. Mm. But it goes well beyond just the websites. It goes, and in fact, the real acceleration came with the advent of mobile apps. The fraud follows the money. Wherever the high usage cases are, the fraud is there. Whether it's chasing clicks, whether it's chasing just impressions, and it happens right across display, CTV, online TV, leads, affiliates, it happens everywhere. It really does follow the money. Your mention about AI, all AI has done is industrialize the scale or accelerate the industrialization of the scale at which it happens.
I get you.
As in these fake websites, fake apps, and so on, get spun up at much, much higher rates. I just want to say one thing. It's not all about fake websites and fake apps.
Mm-hmm.
Very real apps that you and I or our kids or whatever use daily, they themselves, whilst delivering some kind of value to me, the user, are often showing ads which you and I cannot even see.
Yeah, I've actually been down that rabbit hole before. And the point is, I mean, this is not, let's say I'm a, I don't know, whatever, I'm a retailer and I've got a budget. Maybe it's 100,000, maybe it's a million, maybe it's 10 million. The point is that potentially half of this money has been fundamentally wasted. Is there a simple solution? I mean, I know that you at Truesets Online are trying to work on this. Is there a solution for the brands who are, frankly, losing money hand over fist in some cases?
There is a simple solution, but it's only simple if the difficult part, which is getting people to understand that irrespective of what they believe the fraud profile to be, it needs to be further investigated with different tools. And by different tools, we're saying that if it's not a forensic analysis, the chances are an enormous amount of the fraud is being missed. So yes, to take it more seriously and to say, let me at least establish a benchmark with a different tool from what I'm using now, if at all.
And how much is it? I mean, you mentioned it's evolved. I mean, I get that AI, you know, I could spin up a website. It would take me, I don't know, a day, maybe 2 days or something. With AI, I could probably do a dozen of them before breakfast. How much of this is, as soon as we sort of solve for one problem, it's just moved somewhere else? As you said, it follows the money.
Exactly. And so once again, in terms of setting up digital campaigns, the setup process by the practitioners, as in by the advertising team, is phenomenally important. And effectively blocking a website because it's stealing your money is like playing whack-a-mole, because as you've just illustrated, the next one pops up. So it requires a more rigorous measurement process, and two, a far more managed process to optimize against the effects of a fraud. Unfortunately, one cannot just put a brand new fancy lock on the... It just doesn't work that way.
And this then, 100%, I hear what you're saying. This then says, in actual fact, to build this into as part of the campaign from day one and an integral part of the campaign, not something which at the end there's a report that says, well, maybe this number weren't real.
100%. You've hit the nail on the head. And if we had more time to talk, we could start talking about implementation. The optimization of campaigns against fraud is not something that is generally baked into campaign management.
Yeah, and get that right from day one. We'll come back. We'll get that discussion another day when we leave it there. That's Mark Dillon. He is co-founder and CEO, Truesets Online. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. Yesterday, we were chatting with Duncan Armitage. He's from Anchor, talking about the start of your investment journey. He's 25, and he was talking about how he's finding it. We asked you, did you make good investment choices when you were young? Half said, and were laughing, saying, absolutely no ways. A third said, yep, some good ones. The rest of you said, you are still young. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn. This podcast is brought to you by StanLib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobuchle, Nicole Sabut, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Value-conscious shoppers reshaping retail.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.